Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN, and joining me, as he does every single Thursday, is head football coach over at the University of Memphis, Ryan Silverfield, ahead of their game this Saturday against East Carolina on the road. Coach, how's it going?
Going well. Guys have had the right mindset, the right approach. They've had a great week of practice and excited. I mean, a tremendous opportunity on the road versus a very, very good ECU team.
Yep, no doubt. Now, that's the question I wanted to start with. The response from your team. Tough loss last weekend. There's no doubt about it. And obviously, when it comes to the American Conference title race, things like that, need a little bit of help in front of you. Well, how have your guys sort of responded to that type of adversity, that type of feeling here with two games left?
Sure. You know, I think that's how we can be judged as a program and the culture. Is how the guys responded. And, you know, like I mentioned, everybody's pissed off. Everybody's frustrated and mad and all those things. And 8-2 is not good enough. And I love that. I love the fact that we've gotten this program to that point where the expectation is to go undefeated. And that's a great, great thing. But, you know, obviously too many things went wrong in the last game, from lack of execution in the first half by defense to self-inflicted wounds by the offense. Things that we believe are fixable and correctable. And I told all 200 people in the organization, you know, let's have some self-accountability, every single one of us.
Yep.
And to a T, right? And what I'm still learning is, right, with all these new players, some guys do a great job of, you know, motivation and discipline and coming back and swinging harder and getting up off the mat. And you have a few guys that, you know, that have come from places that they don't know how to win, and they just fall back into the, well, we've always lost at my previous place, and so the woe is me, and, you know, all of a sudden a bruise turns into, you know, I may be out for the season. So, you know, we're going to find the guys that love football, the guys that want to be a part of this thing. They're truly all in, and listen, man, 95% of the guys are just roar ready, go play a game.
Yep.
I've had a great week of preparation, the way their focus is in meetings. That's what you can ask for, and you hope it ends up in the right results when you get a chance to play a game.
Now, getting to that game, 35 points in the first half, 33 points in the second half. Defensively, what did you see in that first half versus that second half? I know you guys have been a second-half defense, second-half team for a lot of points in this season. But, you know, that first half, I know you struggled with it. I know they have been struggling with it. What did you see from your vantage point?
Yeah, listen, I mean, it's not a secret. I mean, within the first few plays of games, we just looked frozen. And, you know, whether it goes all the way back to the Troy, you know, third play of the game where they score and they get the penalty, to Arkansas, to, you know, just this past weekend. Like, we are not doing what we need to out of the gates defensively, right? And we are giving up massive explosive plays. And you do that, you just put yourself behind the eight ball. I mean, it's just so hard to say, okay, hey, we're going to spot you 7 points every game, especially when you play a tough opponent. And, you know, you sit there and say, every play matters, right? If it's the very first play of offense for them and they score, well, imagine if we got that 1-3 now. Well, then it's a, you know, you're going down to the end to just play a 4-minute offense and win the football game. We've got to find ways to start faster from a defensive perspective, find ways to get the stops. You know, I don't know if we're waiting and trying to figure out what they're going to do, if we're trying to, if our players' eyes are wrong or are thinking, hey, this may happen, we just need to go play football. We've got a bunch of intelligent football players. We've got coaches that are putting them in the right spots. We've got guys that practice with great habits, but it's got to come together collectively And guess what? It's got to come to collective earlier, right in the first half, first play. And listen, we understand people are going to get yards. People are going to score points. But, you know, you look at our two losses, you know, we haven't gotten the takeaways, and we haven't and ultimately, you know, we've turned the ball over. And so that's how you play losing football when you play good teams. And ultimately, we've got to do a better job in starting faster.
Now, offensively, something that has popped up since about the Tulsa game is you guys have not run the ball the exact same way. Now, we talked about it last week. You guys are being defended differently because of the success you had early this season running the ball. But what else do you attribute to that? Game flow? What are you seeing from your offensive line, from your running backs, Greg, Sutton, Frank, that has sort of led to sort of smaller production, smaller results in that realm?
For sure. Yeah, like we talked about it, teams are playing us differently. Everybody is daring us to throw the football. I mean, teams are saying, listen, we don't think, and I tell our offensive guys, it's a challenge, right? When people sit there and say, your receivers can't beat us, your quarterback can't throw the football, you guys can't pass protect, so we are going to force you to throw the football, you know, because we're going to load the box and make us right. And so that's led some success in the passing game, more passing yards recently. And then, you know, you find yourself behind in games. Obviously, the two-lane game, when you sit there and you feel like you're playing catch-up. So a lot of those things go hand-in-hand. The RPO game, like we said, the built-in, hey, if it's a run-pass option and the box is loaded, you got to do what you got to do. You can't hand the ball off to a dead number. And then ultimately, when you do run the football, you got to execute better, right? Whether it's the running back position, the offensive line, the tight ends, the play calling, everything. It's got to be better. And listen, we take a lot of pride in running the ball the right way. It's just got to show up. Now, again, if we go up there and East Carolina decides to load the box and we're handing the ball, so like, well, that's dumb because they have an extra defender right. That's unblocked. Well, then we have to find ways to win the passing game.
Yeah. Now, something that has been heard, that has been sort of out there, is the utilization of Sutton Smith. I think he has four carries. Obviously, he's your kick returner as well, punt returner as well, so he gets touches that way. But four carries the last two games. What have you been seeing as far as getting him involved and going forward, the utilization of Sutton Smith?
Yeah, we love Sutton. He's done a great job. You know, I think part of it is a lot of times he's been lined up out there wide receiver. A lot of times he's been, you know, a guy that is being utilized as a returner, right? You know, you look at the return last week when he got chipped up in the ankle, you know, making sure he's healthy and full go is as important as anything. We also have great faith in Greg Duozier. And, you know, look, Frank Passant's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. I think every time Frank touches the ball, he's, you know, getting the tough yards. And we got to find ways to be able to run between the tackles. We've got to find ways to be able to go get that 3 yards when it's needed. And, look, I think the world of Sutton, he's a phenomenal running back and a great young man. We got to find production at all of our running back positions. And, yeah, listen, we know he's a weapon. We're going to continue to find ways to try to get in football.
Yep. Now, this is just a sort of general thought. Like when we look at the process of winning and losing games, I know how hard it is to win a college football game. But you could be on top of the world 1 week, and then the next week people are piling on. And I think our good friend Kenny Dillingham mentioned that earlier this season at Arizona State. He's been having his sort of up and downs because of injuries and what have you. So how do you handle it, and how do you take sort of the way you handle it and sort of impart that on your team?
Sure. Listen, we've said it all along, right? I mean, after the Arkansas win, you're king of the world. Everybody's patting you on the back. Well, I don't care if you're the head coach or the custodian or the backup linebacker. Everybody's telling you how good you are. It's no different, right? Florida State last year, we went down there. We love you, we love you, love you, and then you go lose. And we hate you, we hate you, we hate you. And listen, every head coach, other than, I think, who are the four undefeated teams, are probably dealing with that. And listen, I get it. It's the nature of it. I love the fact that our fans are so passionate. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that people care. Whether it's the choice language, who cares? So be it. I'm I'm focused on the program and the players, and I appreciate people that care enough about this program to have the opinions. But yes, you hear it from head coaches all the time. You win a game and you do well, you're unstoppable, and then you lose a game and you need to pack up your stuff and move on. But that's the nature of it. Kenny Dillingham's a great coach. But, you know, when he's getting people telling him he needs to go and take another job after they lose a game, that's the nature of this thing. We get paid well, and we're taken care of, and our job is to win every football game and graduate our guys. And I promise you that we're working hard every single day to do so. So with our players, I just tell them, please, you know, whatever's going on out there, when it's good, ignore that noise. When it's bad, ignore that noise. And as you guys know, like, I'm off social media, I read the papers, and I explain to our guys, I'd probably do the same, because we do. You know, you read about Louisville's head coach, and they have a loss to Cal in overtime, and him and his family and his wife and son are getting death threats, and so is the quarterback. We've had, you know, look, it's the nature of it. Players have shared with us that they've received negative comments from people, and it happens all over. But we've got to just keep our blinders on and work really hard and be process-driven in a one-day-at-a-time approach. And really, the only people's opinions that matter are the ones within the locker room, as long as we're working our tails off. And I can promise our fans, every single day, I wake up with passion to be the best version of myself, to give everything I have to this program, and so do our players. We want to win. We want to win for our fans more than anything, and we'll continue to work to do so.
Now, coming up this Saturday, I'm going to put it this way, because I already put it this way on my show. I think you guys are playing one of the best-kept secrets in the G5, a very, very good team that had a chance earlier this season and probably should have won on the road against Tulane. And then the other losses you look at are to Power 4 opponents, one to NC State, one to BYU. But East Carolina is a team that's, you know, still very much in the fight, controls their own destiny when it comes to the American Conference title race. But what do you see from this team? Caden Hauser at quarterback, their defense is pretty dang good. London Montgomery, their running back, is a dang good player as well. So what have you seen from East Carolina on film, and how do you feel you guys are preparing for that challenge this Saturday?
Let's call it what it is. I mean, they are damn good. You're exactly right. Listen, they got one loss in conference and is at the road on Tulane, at Tulane, and they had every opportunity to win that football game. I mean, truly, watching that game, they had every opportunity to win it. And then you're exactly right. They lost to a top 10 ranked BYU program and then at NC State by a score. So this team is dangerous. I mean, they are every conference opponent they're playing, other than Tulane, they are absolutely whooping. They're only giving up 17 points a game. I mean, that's hard to find in college football, especially this day and age. And, you know, they are scoring. They throw the ball over the yard. They have the fastest tempo in this conference. They go, and they push the envelope. And you know, listen, we're going to be playing down there in Greenville. It's probably going to be a sellout crowd. They show up, and the student section sells out, and they do an amazing job. So we're going to have to be at our absolute best. We've got to continue to focus on ourselves and find ways to not give up the explosive play and not have self-inflicted wounds on offense. We do those things, we give ourselves the opportunity to compete. We got to play for four quarters, and ultimately, hopefully, we ended up on the right side of the win column.
Yeah, now, you're going and playing in Greenville. That's a tough place to play. I always wanted to, because I was told some fun things about, you know, going on the road there and how good of an environment it was. How are you getting your guys prepared for that? And what have you been told, and what have you seen from that crowd there in East Carolina? They seem to always rally around that team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's college town, and they show up. I mean, they're filling up over 40,000 seats almost every home game, and they're passionate about the Pirates. And, you know, obviously their success this year is helping, but they've always been. I mean, you and I have known over the years, even my old Conference USA days, right? They had C.J. Johnson, one of the great running backs there. You know, yep. I mean, they've always put out some great players, and they rally around the team. So it's going to be loud. It's going to be probably our toughest road test from a noise standpoint. So we've had to prepare for that with crowd noise. But, you know, again, it's going to come down to our focus and our execution for four quarters.
Yeah, all right. Now, final thing. I wanted to bring this up because I saw this. I see this out there. And it's not surprising to see some of these guys with these takes, but it has to do with some of these power conference voices voicing their displeasure with a group of five team getting into the college football playoff. You know, Paul Feinbaum's the most recent one. I've seen Danny Cannell. I've seen a lot of people discuss this. But what's your reaction to that? When you look at this conference in particular, you look at the American, South Florida has the win on the road against Florida. You guys have the win against Arkansas, against the Power 4 opponent. Tulane has two wins against Power 4 opponents. You look around the rest of the G5, there's some Power 4 wins out there. What's your response when you see guys continually have that conversation and try to put the group of five and the programs within it in a lesser than spot, in this inferior spot, when you look around the rest of the country? Like, what's your response to people that have that opinion on a constant basis?
Well, listen, everybody's entitled to their opinions, and ultimately, I've always said this all along, I think the group of five deserves a playoff bid. I think you watch the quality of football that's being played, especially in this conference, like you just said it, the team deserves a shot, you know, and I've seen it, you know, firsthand how good some of these teams are compared to some of these others, right? Like you just said, we got a win versus an SEC team. We beat the last Power 4 teams, you know, the last four Power 4 teams. And then you look, like you said, what Tulane's done, what South Florida's done. I mean, it's time and time again. You know, even Army went on the road and beat a Big 12 team this year. You know, so it's just, I think you're seeing, I think it's good for college football. I'm a firm believer in the way this thing is continues to change. You still want to make it meaningful for every team that lines up. 136 Division I teams. You still want every single one of them to have the opportunity to possibly play for the grand trophy. And I think that's ultimately, you know, even if you're the 136th best team out there, maybe you sit there and say, you know what, at least there's, you never know. You never know.
Right.
And I think if all of a sudden you say, hey, we're going to eliminate over half of college football from ever having that chance, I don't know if that's the right thing. No one's ever really cared about my opinion on all this, right? Whether it's transfer portal, rev share, or the playoffs. But, you know, listen, I just know what great quality football is being played in the American, and all we can do is control what we control, and we'll see how this thing shakes out.
Yeah, and then the other thing that they would suggest is, you know, they play their own championship, Group of Five plays their championship. Like, what has your thought been there? I know you don't get a lot of questions about that, but what's your thought on that, you know, potential, I guess, outcome, even though I don't know if that's going to happen here in the near future?
Yeah, no, again, I think the current format's pretty great. You know, I think obviously there's talks of expansion of playoffs, and if that happens, so be it. More teams with more opportunities, I'm not necessarily against that. You know, sometimes when someone asks me, hey, should there be 90 teams in the NCAA basketball tournament? I don't know, right? Like, right. I'm a traditionalist. But listen, I think, again, the more teams that we can have involved at the football level, and every G5 having that opportunity to play for the playoffs, I think it's huge. I don't think it should be separated. A lot of people talk about that that's the road it's going down, you know, these mega conferences, all that. Listen, I've got a lot on my plate already. I'm just trying to take care of my front yard and yeah. Find a way to get our guys prepared to beat East Carolina, and we can have those conversations in February.
Yeah, and real quick, since we talked about it last week, going for two down 8, you guys went for two down 15. This week, is that the sort of same idea, same you know, thought process when it comes to the analytics and it comes to trying to win a ball game?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So, right down 15, at some point you got to go for two. So, might as well go for the first one, you know. And then if you don't, at least you know. But at some point, you know, you don't want to score two touchdowns. Okay, good. We're down a point. Well, hey, knucklehead.
And to be, I mean, it definitely changed the complexion of that game, especially there in the waning moments.
Sure. Well, that's the nature of it. Listen, I'm always going to do what is the best to give us a situation to win the football game. And clearly down 15, you have to go for two. So I don't know what was said publicly, but yeah, I mean, I think most people understand football. If you can do math, right, you get 8 and then you score, then you go down 15. And then the biggest question that you're missing, Gabe, is, hey, Ryan, if you had scored the next time,
right,
would you have gone to 2 for the win, or would you have gone 7 and gone to overtime? And so, to be determined.
Yeah, I guess we'll never know. But, Coach, I appreciate it. Good luck coming up this weekend to you and your team.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you guys. Go Tigers. Thank you.
Yes, sir. He is Ryan Silverfield, head football coach over at the University of Memphis on X at R. Silverfield. Big challenge this weekend coming up on Saturday against East Carolina. They end the year with two teams that are ahead of them in the standings, East Carolina and, of course, Navy. We'll see if they can finish strong. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we'll hop into the Blitz right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
All right, Gabe. On Inside the NBA last night, Charles Barkley gave his take on the Nico Harrison firing.
The Mavs were a mediocre team until he made those trades. He was doing a good job. Then he had the bad luck with Anthony Davis never being available, basically. But the thing that bothers me is he's just being made a scapegoat. Listen, Shaq knows this. Kenny knows this. There's no way in the world Nico Harrison had the power to trade Luka Doncic unless the owner of the team signed
Patrick
up.
Dumont.
Yes. That was his call. So I feel bad the way Nico is being made a scapegoat. But anybody who knows anything about basketball know good and well Nico Harrison did not have enough power to trade Luka Doncic. So that's the thing that bothers me. He's had a streak of bad luck with Anthony Davis and Kyrie both getting hurt. But the premise of this trade is Nico Harrison. I hear all these fools and idiots on TV talk. Nico Harrison going to be the guy who traded Luka Doncic. No, the Dallas Maverick organization made that call.
All right. First of all, I want to go back to what he said at the beginning and a little bit there at the end. Bad luck. He talked about Nico Harrison got bad luck because AD and Kyrie got hurt. Okay. Is it bad luck with AD? Is it bad luck that AD's only played 14 of 47 games with the Dallas Mavericks? Because to me, it's not. It's just par for the course. That's what happens.
He was injured when he traded for him.
Also, Kyrie. Kyrie's not crazy oft injured, although he has been off the floor for multiple spurts throughout his career. But he is 33 years old. Like, bodies start to break down at that time. So, like, I don't even know if I want to put that in the bad luck category. But the scapegoat thing, how much more did Nico have to say regarding whose decision it was to trade Luka Doncic before you realize that he's the one who came up with the idea and got ownership to agree to it? And listen, I get that ownership in the Dallas Mavericks organization has to agree to the trade. They have to sign off on it. But if your GM, who you have entrusted with personnel decision-making, comes to you and says, hey, here's our plan, and you agree with said plan and you're okay with said plan, you usually sign off on it and allow him to do what he does. But Nico Harrison, and Nico Harrison alone, is the one who came up with the plan to trade Luka Doncic. And I don't know how many times he had to tell you it. Connor, I'm going to just read some quotes from, you know, the days and weeks following the trade from Nico Harrison talking to the assembled media, national and Dallas, you know, local media. I'm going to read some quotes. Tell me when you hear one that makes you think that, you know, Nico Harrison was forced into making this trade. Is that okay? You got me? Here's one. There's no regrets on the trade. Part of my job is to do the best thing for the Mavericks, not only today, but also in the future. And some of the decisions I'm going to make are going to be unpopular. That's my job. I have to stand by it. Not going to stop me there? Okay. Nope. We believe in the move we made. You obviously don't, and that's fine. You're entitled to your opinions, but we're excited. I think once we win, that will change your mind. Not going to stop me? We targeted AD with our philosophy of defense wins championships. We wanted a two-way player to lead our team that was Anthony Davis. And so everybody's going to have their critics And I'm not sure what Mark said, but that's a better question left for him. But we got what we wanted. It was in response to a Mark Cuban quote. You didn't stop me on any of the quotes. Why not?
Because it was his idea.
Of course it was. And it's been his idea the entire time. And we know this. I just don't get this take. I don't understand it at all. Yes, the organization and the owner had to sign off on it. I fully understand that. But when you entrust somebody to make personnel decisions on behalf of an organization, the owner usually signs off on moves. Now, if it was Mark Cuban, he probably would have said no, but they had passed it off to Patrick Dumont at that point. This is not that hard to understand, Connor, and I don't know why there's so many people with really having trouble understanding that this was clearly Nico Harrison's decision that ultimately got passed down throughout the organization. He made it. He executed it. He did it with Rob Pelinka, and the Mavs are worse off because of it.
I just don't understand why people are citing the owner having to sign off on a trade and thinking that that somehow absolves Nico Harrison when he brought the trade to the owner. The owner's a dumbass, too. Dumbasses. There's not one. Yes. You're getting two for the price of one. That's what's happening here. Only one of them can be fired, yes. And the one dumbass that can be fired was.
And ultimately,
that's what's happening here.
Patrick Dumont, listen, based on everything we've heard and everything that has been reported, Patrick Dumont did not bring this to Nico Harrison. It was the other way around. Harrison brought this to Patrick Dumont, and Patrick Dumont gave him the check mark saying, okay, go ahead with it.
Here's the deal. If Nico Harrison was a scapegoat here, and if he was forced to trade Luka, we would know by now.
Yes.
But every single person who reports for the Dallas Mavericks has cited many times and said many times this was Nico's idea. And he did not like Luka. He thought he was a fat drunk who didn't play defense, so he traded for Anthony Davis, and he got the owner
to
sign off for it.
He said
Nico
it.
Says it with his own words.
There's no regrets on the trade. Part of my job is to do the best for the Dallas Mavericks. We believe in the move we made. We targeted AD with our philosophy of defense wins championships.
Here's the thing.
He tells you constantly.
If Nico was a scapegoat here, he would have told you when rumors started circling that he was going to be fired by the Dallas Mavericks, it would have started to come out that the idea was not his because he needs to find another job in the NBA or another job in general. We would also know by now. It's been multiple days since Nico Harrison got fired. And you know what we haven't heard? Nico's side. It's the Players Tribune piece, Nico's side, hasn't come out yet, has it? Probably won't, because it was his idea. It was the worst trade in NBA history that was made by a GM who had very good trades and moves up until that moment. But one bad trade like this, the worst trade in NBA history, will cost you your job and should. You traded a generational talent for an oft-injured player who was injured when you traded for him. You had an owner who was susceptible to your idea, so you took it to him, convinced him it was the right move, and then the owner now realizes how bad of a move it was and fired you.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that the owner's also not a dumbass and doesn't have blood on his hands, because he does. He just can't fire himself and won't fire himself. He deserves just as much blame as Nico Harrison. But that doesn't make Nico a scapegoat.
It does not.
It just makes them both guilty.
Yes. Yes. It's not that hard to understand, and I need people to stop with this stupid narrative of Nico Harrison being a scapegoat. How many times does he have to tell you that the trade was his idea before you believe him?
LSU and Brian Kelly's saga isn't going quietly into the night. Brian Kelly has denied a $25 million and a $30 million settlement in a legal filing on Monday. Brian Kelly's attorneys say LSU has taken the position that it has not formally terminated Kelly as the Tigers football coach and is now seeking to fire him for cause and potentially avoid paying his full $54 million buyout.
What really makes me laugh about this whole situation is how did these discussions go behind the scene when, you know, Brian Kelly's sitting there with his lawyer talking with the AD and the president at LSU? They say, because he's owed $54 million, they say $25 million. He says no. $30 million, no. What did the LSU folks say? This guy's good. This guy, he knows what he's talking about. I can't believe that he's not settling for $20 million under what he's owed. And here's the thing. You can't fire him for cause just because people don't like him. They didn't like him when you hired him. He didn't make a lot of friends along the way at Notre Dame or Cincinnati or Central Michigan either. So, I don't know where they're going to find this cause. You're going to have to try harder than saying, well, oh, look at the players. You didn't treat them right. Like, what are we going to do here? But this is what LSU is trying to do. Shout out to our man Michael Scott from The Office.
Is there no way we can get rid of him?
Not without cause, Michael.
I have cause. It is because I hate him.
that's what's going on right now at LSU. It's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, it's absolutely embarrassing. And you know what doesn't help? Not having an AD during these negotiations right now.
Well, they do, but it was the interim AD who's been lifted up.
Uh-huh.
And, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not having everything fully in place is a problem. But you know what my advice is? Bite the bullet. Pay your $54 million. Move on. You're not going to find – and on the back end, here's the other part. If they're going to try to fire him with cause, and this has already been thrown out there to the general public that they're trying to fire him with cause, even if they find a reason, even though not a lot of people like Brian Kelly, we know what has happened at that point. So then Brian Kelly will have more of a leg to stand on, and you're losing the battle in the public court of public opinion. If you're LSU, like, just bite the bullet, pay the $54 million, move on with your life, hire a new coach, and get back to your winning ways. Like, I just dragging this out, making it a spectacle, doing this theater nonsense with it is not going to serve your interest or anybody's interest in the LSU orbit.
I'm not crazy. Them trying to claim that they haven't actually fired him is absolutely insane, right?
Yeah, they fired him.
That's absolutely insane.
They without question fired him. There's just no question about it. Right after the A&M game when they got spanked at home. They fired him. Or else he'd be coaching the team right now.
Right. That's what I'm like. So is he just hanging out in his office or what's going on here?
He's probably on the golf course just laughing at them trying to find a cause. People don't like him.
I
don't know if they're going to find, like, I don't know what he did behind the scenes. If they find, like, somebody to claim that they had an extramarital affair with him. Like, they're going to try to find everything and anything possible.
They're calling Edo and saying, what did you do?
But that's also disgusting from the LSU side of
things.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
You fired him because he didn't win. That's not for cause. I mean, I guess that's a cause in itself, but it's not for cause per contract and how they're written. So just pay him his $54 million, move on. And the fact that you thought he would agree to a $25 million or $30 million settlement is kind of laughable. He's not on your side. You fired him. He felt like he needed more time. He felt like you treated him unfairly. Just pay him to get him out of the picture. I don't know. Before you fired him, didn't you know you were going to have to do this? So why on the back end are you trying to, you know, nickel and dime and you know, claim that you're poor. Like, just pay him $54 million. Move on with your life.
Listen, I think that Brian Kelly is scum.
I don't like Brian Kelly.
But you have to pay him that money.
Yeah.
So pay him his money.
Yeah.
Pay him his money.
It's gross. I think they're gonna have to.
Yeah.
There's just no other way around it.
Gabe, every single day that goes by, we move closer and closer to the return of Edo. But that's what I was saying is right now they're calling Ed Orgeron and saying, just tell us all the insane things that you did at LSU. Maybe we can find sticks to Brian Kelly.
Well, but also, yeah, you know, if you wanted to fire somebody with cause, it would be him.
That's what I mean.
And they didn't.
I'm saying they need to get ideas. Say, tell us all the illegal things that you did.
And we're
trying to match them to what Brian Kelly did. That has to be their best strategy right now. I truly think that one of the best jobs in this country is a fired college football coach.
Yes.
Specifically an SEC fired coach.
25. Hey, we know we owe you $54 million. How about 25?
How about half?
No. How about 30? No. Damn, this guy's good.
I can't believe it. He outwitted us. It's a battle of wits, and he won.
Hey, let's get Michael Scott, though, one more time, please. Please, shout out.
Is there no way we can get rid of him?
Not without cause, Michael.
I have cause. It is because I hate him.
That's it.
NFL owners have filed a grievance against the NFLPA to stop the annual report cards. Jets owner Woody Johnson called them totally bogus and was the one behind it per ESPN. Johnson received an F grade from his players last year. Totally bogus. Totally bogus.
So when you get a bad grade, you got to blame it on the players.
Gabe, it's almost like the jobs reports that don't exist.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But yeah, brother, no, we're not doing this. Players deserve to let their feelings be heard on ownership and diet and nutrition and facilities and all the different things that go into being an NFL football player. And if you're not delivering on your end as an ownership group or as an owner, you deserve to be called out and you deserve to be made an example. And Woody Johnson, I think most of the grades for the Jets were right around C plus or, you know, better. But for ownership, the ownership grade, you know, the relationship with the owner, the decisions he makes, he got an F. He was the only owner in the entire NFL who got an F. Yeah, no, just because you get a bad grade does not mean we stop this altogether. Players Association is allowed to speak up on what they feel is necessary, and they felt it necessary to give you an F as an owner. Be better. That's the one thing I don't understand about people sometimes. You know, when somebody tells you you're bad at your job, you can take it upon yourself to do the woe is me, play the victim like Woody Johnson's doing here. Or you can look in a mirror and change some things about the way you're running your organization and the way you're conducting business on a day-to-day basis. And this tells me Woody Johnson isn't planning on changing, and he probably should. They have the longest active playoff drought in the NFL right this second. You probably should sort of fix some things. You're sitting there at 2-7. You probably should change some things, but he wants to play the victim instead and say that it was unfair, it was bogus. These are players that you brought in to vote on your ability to be an owner, and they gave you an F, and that F stands. You can change that if you want, but you're not going to, clearly.
Are the Jets the most depressing franchise to be a fan of?
Oh, God, yes, without question. We have a good friend here at the station, George Ruggiero, King George, that has to go through it pretty consistently. I mean, it's borderline child abuse to have to raise a kid to be a Jets fan.
To pass that down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's horrible. It's absolutely terrible. I mean, where else? What other organizations would we even put in that category?
I mean,
Giants isn't good, but at least they have two Super Bowls in the 21st century.
Yeah, no, the Giants, they have a championship. The Maple Leafs are probably up there just in pain.
Hey, but at least they're
they have moments.
They get to the playoffs and they get one seeds and, you know, they do that type of thing. Jets don't even do that.
I mean, the Pelicans is pretty rough.
Pelicans is rough. Grizzlies right now stinks, but that's
but
not
have,
now.
But
that's,
like they have moments.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that's not.
And the
it's
history
not the
of,
same.
Of Grizzlies, it, I wouldn't say.
And even you know, just basketball in New Orleans, beyond the Pelicans, basketball in New Orleans is pain. That's pain.
I mean, Browns is pretty rough.
Browns is really rough, but they've been to the playoffs more recently than the Jets.
The Jets just don't have any hope either. There's just no future there. There's none whatsoever. What is their future?
Yeah. And they have bad turf at MetLife.
Yeah. Their players' knees explode all the time. Yeah. They have a terrible owner who wants to deny reality. Yeah. Gabe, this is breaking news, but we obtained the phone call that Woody Johnson made to the NFLPA.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
To ask them to get rid of it. Here it is.
Is there no way we can get rid of him?
Not without cause, Michael.
I have cause. It is because I hate him.
Yeah, but I also think this is coming from an entitled spot. You know, a billionaire asking the people under him that he's not treating equitably or fair, or they don't think he's doing a good job. He wants their voices to not be heard. I think this is a very firm place of entitlement for Woody Johnson to try to put the kibosh on this.
Well, it's insane because we all have eyeballs and we all see what's happening. We've all seen what was happening. They had one up year, and we even said it during that Hard Knocks, you know, Jets time with Aaron Rodgers. They had some hope, but it felt like such a PR stunt to try to turn the tides on the way that people viewed the Jets. And he was so involved in the filming of Hard Knocks that it felt it felt there was no soul in it. It felt like a commercial for the Jets.
And genuine fake.
Genuinely fake. Every single time he opened his mouth, it felt like just BS was flowing out of it. And I'm not surprised that he runs one of the worst teams in sports.
Yeah, and he's trying to get people for the NFLPA to not vote on these things so he can, you know, slide by. And
you know what they should do? They should just remove the Jets from it and at the bottom say it just have Jets were so bad they were not included.
Yeah. It's just the rest of the owners, though, I wonder what they think about this.
About the report?
Yeah,
cards?
Yeah.
Depends on what owner you are.
Yeah, for sure. But the NFL owners have filed a grievance, so that means there's more than one. It's more than Woody Johnson.
Well, look at the bottom of the standings. That you're going to find your owner.
Browns, the Haslams.
Titans.
Yeah, that's probably a good one. That's a good guess.
Yeah.
That's a good guess. I don't even know if I want to call that a guess. That's probably
Bengals?
Without question.
Bengals, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
It's possible. But yeah, I doubt the good owners, the owners that have a good football team and get good grades.
Jerry?
I doubt.
Is Jerry on it?
Something tells me Jerry, even if he got an F, would say, you know, hey, all eyeballs are good eyeballs.
Hey, good publicity. Yeah. Good publicity.
Yeah.
Hey.
All publicity is good publicity.
Listen, F ain't the worst grade. Last letter in the alphabet, Z.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it feels like. I don't even know. I don't think Jerry would be a part of this. That's just my feeling.
Okay.
So, yeah, Woody Johnson trying to stop player grades, even though seems like they're needed.
Yes.
If you're getting an F and then you're trying to put the stop to them, it tells me that you have a problem that you don't want to address.
Correct.
Now, there's not a problem when you go to Old Dominic Distillery on the weekend. They have events all the time. Go to olddominic.com. They're at 305 South Front Street right there on the riverfront. They want to celebrate with you. It could be anything. You know, you could go down there and get some, great cocktails for a birthday. If you have a luncheon or an award ceremony or, you know, a rehearsal dinner for a wedding or you need a spot for a wedding reception, go to olddominic.com, fill out their questionnaire, and they can handle that for you. But also we're celebrating. Old Dominic has won an award for their Bonded Tennessee Whiskey. They've earned Best in Class at the prestigious San Francisco World Spirits Competition. You can go pick up a bottle of Old Dominic Bonded Tennessee Whiskey at your local liquor store today. But on top of the whiskey, they have bourbon, they have toddy. We're getting to the cold weather months, so that toddy, it's the oldest spirit that they have, and it is great during the winter months, so go pick up a bottle today. But they have gin and vodka as well. They have a new premium vodka that you need to get your hands on as well. But make sure you go visit them at 305 South Front Street. You can book a tour and tasting at olddominic.com. There's a lot that you can do down there. You can just stop in. Make sure, using olddominic.com, you ship Old Dominic spirits anywhere in the United States of America. And we have the holidays coming up. Whatever holiday that you celebrate, get a bottle of Old Dominic, whether it be whiskey or bourbon, whatever it is. Send it to those extended family members and friends that you need to get a gift for. They don't get their hands on a bottle of Old Dominic every day. Make sure you're the one that allows them to get their hands on a bottle of Old Dominic. Old Dominic Distillery, come say hi. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we will rewind right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose.
So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller,
the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.